Welcome to the Inclusive Enterprise Podcast with host Charlotte Hughes. Charlotte is CEO and principal consultant of Inclusive Leaders Group, a talent and organizational development consulting firm specializing in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. Every 2 weeks, you'll hear Charlotte and her guest, who are distinguished leaders, share their transformational conversation with actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your workplace and career to drive innovation and profitable growth through diversity, inclusion, and belonging. Now, it's time for your daily dose of inclusive leadership.
Well, welcome. Charlotte Hughes here, your host. I am excited to have our guest, Keith Weitch, joining us today. Now, Keith is a seasoned executive, board of director, best-selling author and speaker, diversity, equity, and inclusion thought leader, and change accelerator. He has risen through the ranks with more than 30 years of experience, earning significant results for some of America's best-known corporations, including Walmart, Ameritech, Convergys, AT&T, IBM, Pitney Bowes, and Super Value. Now, Keith has become a successful corporate president and one of the highest-ranking African-American executives in the U.S. Keith understands the rules for success, and he shares his insights as an author of the recent book, Diversity is Not Enough, A Roadmap to Recruit, Develop, and Promote Black Leaders in America. Now, he's appeared on The Today Show, Fox Business News, and media outlets such as Time, USA Today, and Black Enterprise. Now, he's received several awards, including the MLK Jr. International Board of Renaissance Leaders by Morehouse College for his dedication to developing young talent. Now, there's some statistics. According to the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, in 2018, Black professionals held just 3.3% of all senior leadership or executive roles, which is defined as within two reporting levels of the CEO. And over the past two decades, there have only been 20 Black CEOs in total. Of those, only four have been women. So there's certainly more work to do. Would you agree, Keith?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to welcome you.
So glad to be here and appreciate you inviting me.
Well, we're glad because you have so much to share, so much lived experience and sage advice that I know our viewers and listeners are going to learn a lot in our session today. So reflect back now when you think of the journey you've taken from the classroom to the boardroom. You've observed a lot over the years. And in your book titled Diversity is Not Enough, you describe how DEI is broken for Black professionals. So just wanted to know, what motivated you to write this book?
Yeah, thank you, Charlotte. What motivated me, and I have to give you an update, it's been 40 years in corporate America. I started 40. In 1981, and I've seen a lot during that time. Yes. But what specifically motivated me to write this book was after the George Floyd murder and all the civil unrest, there were many companies, if not most of the Fortune 500, who really made verbal statements of, we are committed to Black and diverse talent, we're committed to DEI. And after really about a year of that, what they realized were there were two camps. There was a camp that realized, hey, what I'm doing is not working. And so I wrote the book to really help that group understand, if you are serious and intentional about this, here are some best practices. So that was the first group. The second group was the group that, for lack of a better term, had what I call excuses of, well, we can't find talent, we can't this. And so I really wanted to give them a no excuses roadmap to say, hey, let's eliminate the excuses. And so that's really the two major audiences I wrote for. If there were a tertiary audience, it would be for Black professionals everywhere to, if you are in an organization that is struggling with really making sure that you're part of that DEI story, here's something you can give them as, hey, here's some things you might want to consider.
That's excellent, because we do know that there are many organizations that have done exactly as you said. And some of them are just have no idea where to begin in some cases. So this book that you've written, and it is a stellar one because it's concise. It is to the point, and I think all of us can certainly benefit from that. When you think about the fact that there's no secret, many Black professionals have lost faith in DEI programs. Why is DEI broken?
Yeah, the reason I say DEI is broken is that it never lived up to its promise. And its promise was one to really make sure that from an equity and inclusion standpoint, that all groups in general and Blacks in particular got to benefit. The way I describe it, Charlotte, is diversity means everyone gets invited to the party. Mm-hmm. Inclusion means everyone gets a welcome seat at the table. They're heard, they're valued, they're appreciated, they're respected. And equity says everyone gets to order off the same menu of opportunity as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And when it particularly comes to Black professionals, we may have been invited to the party, but we necessarily weren't made to feel included or valued or appreciated. And we definitely have not been privy to the exact same menus of opportunity. My analogy is, you know, one of my favorite restaurants, they have a bar menu and they have a restaurant menu.
Yes.
And the meals aren't the same. And mm-hmm. so too often, you know, we've been relegated to the bar menu, mm-hmm. If that.
Right.
And so that's really why it was broken for us, is that we've been invited to the party. But because we haven't been included and because we haven't ordered the same menu, we came hungry and we're leaving hungry.
Absolutely. We're also starting at different places. Even whoever we are, we're not at the same space and time. And the intersectionality piece really brings that home, that everyone has a unique need. And if organizations are willing to address those, then it sounds like the promise might be able to be closer met.
Right. It could be. I think that there are a lot of mental models that are still at play that really, you know, hold Black professionals back. When I talk about mental models, it's everything from the angry Black woman mm-hmm. to, you know, the mm-hmm. aggressive Black male to the first mental model that maybe even challenges our you know, right to be there, our credibility, our contributions. And mm-hmm. so we really have to work through all that. And it's not easy. Mental models are hard to break.
And even for ourselves and for those that we work with in terms of their perceptions of what we're capable of or what makes sense for us to be working on or opportunities that make sense for us, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And some of that just comes from years of being, you know, really what I call undervalued, underestimated, and marginalized. Mm-hmm. After you go through so much of that, you begin to question yourself.
You do.
And so I've had that in my mm-hmm. career at times where,
sure.
you know, because I wasn't receiving the recognition, the rewards, the promotions, you tend to doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to, you know, make sure that you're strong in your own will mm-hmm. of what you bring to the table.
Yeah, you start to almost deselect yourself from opportunities.
Absolutely.
Because you don't think you are qualified.
Or you think you're qualified, but you don't think you'll get it. It's kind of
yes.
like the Rooney Rule.
That's right.
The NFL.
Oh, my
okay.
goodness. The analogies between sports imitating life is a truly amazing, as you have experienced recently, right, with the Rooney Rule.
Yeah.
It just tells you.
And the Rooney Rule is not just limited to NFL. I mean, the Rooney Rule exists
yes.
all over corporate America.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And so really, the Rooney Rule kind of tells us that we can have a policy, but it doesn't mean the policy is going to work.
Absolutely. You have to change the hearts and minds of people. Mm-hmm. And again, those mental models.
Yes.
I came up of a time where Blacks weren't considered to be capable to be quarterbacks
yes.
in the NFL.
That's right.
What we've seen now over the last 30, 40 years, that's not true. But
mm-hmm.
there was a mental model that wouldn't let that happen.
Yes.
And there's still mental models today that we have to, you know, work through and fight through to really let people know that we are here. You know, most companies will tell you, I want the top talent. And that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to admit that if you want top talent, some of that talent is going to be Black talent.
Yes. It doesn't look like you, may not sound like you, may not behave like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that openness is important, as we know. So what would you say are some lessons that we've learned over the years that have contributed to the situation we're in today? You mentioned the mental models. Are there other things that you can share that we might need to be mindful of that got
Absolutely.
Us here?
Mm-hmm. The first thing I will tell you is so much effort in DEI, particularly as it pertains to Blacks, are in the recruiting process, right? Let's go higher. Let's go bring them on board. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the challenges there is that if you only fish in a pond that has goldfish, that's all you're going to pull out of it. So a lot of organizations we've challenged to say, you know, diversify where you even look for talent, because it's out there, but you have to look for it. Mm-hmm. The second piece, though, and again, it goes back to recruiting, is a lot of corporations and organizations, once they recruit that talent, they check the box and they think they're done. Mm-hmm. That's really the beginning. It's how is that talent onboarded? How is it brought into the organization? How is it developed over a career life cycle? And so too often we get hired, and the numbers support this. If you look at our representation from a hierarchy in corporate America, we are very much bunched at the bottom end of the management tree.
Right.
You gave a figure of about 3.3%, and that's about accurate. And so, again, it's not just enough to go to an HBCU and hire Charlotte or hire Keith. Mm-hmm. It's are you developing, grooming, and helping that talent be the best that it can be? And that's also a missed opportunity.
Yes, it's creating that environment. And I have to say that the gathering of diverse talent at the front line and the lower levels, not even management, is not uncommon in other sectors. So it's across industries within healthcare and other aspects of business. It's not uncommon. And so when we have those questions, I work with HR and business leaders, they say, well, how do we keep them? We bring them in. And then the question is, what environment are you creating that's going to support that growth and for them to achieve, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I talk about, you know, this analogy. You're going to find I love analogies. But, you know, it's not enough to bring diverse talent into your organization. Mm-hmm. It's akin to making sure that that's a culture that's inclusive, that receives them, develops them. It's like bringing adopting a child into a dysfunctional family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that child probably will not grow and develop to be all he or she can be.
That's right.
Because they're fighting that dysfunction that's already existing. And so of all the DEI, I'm more focused on inclusion. Because if you create a culture of inclusion where everyone is valued, everyone is appreciated, everyone has a voice, then when you bring in that diverse talent, they're brought into a more welcome situation.
That's right. Well, they're standards, they're norms that are established from being inclusive, right?
Absolutely.
And that's important. And that's where the leadership comes in. And that's where, well, we've talked a little bit in your book. You mentioned when CEOs leave who are proponents and advocates for DEI. And then if they're not the ones who are successors, then you have to start all over again.
You do. And that's really based on the fact that it was never ingrained in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Culture eats strategy for breakfast, is
Absolutely.
Your favorite saying.
Yes.
And when you think about the culture of DEI, it's also not limited to HR and the chief diversity officer.
Mm-hmm.
The most inclusive companies are the ones who look at DEI from a supplier diversity perspective, from a philanthropy perspective. Are we giving money to diverse organizations?
Mm-hmm.
From a board perspective, I mean, they're looking at it from a total business lens.
Yes.
And if you do it that way, if a new CEO does come in who isn't maybe as embrace of DEI, they almost have to be because the culture has it.
Exactly.
But if it's only me as that leader and it's not ingrained in the organization, it really can be doomed to fail. The other mistake that we have to realize is the CEO can embrace DEI all he or she wants.
Mm-hmm.
But if the lower levels of management, where the rubber meets the road,
That's
where
right.
the people are being managed and developed, if that level doesn't embrace it, they don't get it, it will never really be all it could be.
Right. And it's that it is that delicate yet very influential middle management that
you got
makes
it.
The difference, right?
It really does. That's where it really happens at.
And so, well, we know that everyone contributes, but some have a more of a pivotal influence over that. So now we've heard, and I know you've mentioned this before, but we've heard that folks can't find enough qualified Black candidates to recruit, particularly P&L leaders. Is that a fact? Is that a myth? And why?
That is one of the myths and mental models that exist.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we are in every facet of corporate America, from P&L to HR to what have you. Mm-hmm. It goes back to where you look and where you have relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, some of the organizations that do this well have relationships with the National Black NBA Association, have relationships with the Executive Leadership Council, have relationships with, you know, NESBE, the, you know, National Association of Black Engineers, what have you. There are organizations, professional organizations that exist that if you were just to tap into their network and their membership, you can find talent for every level in your organization. But again, you've got to be mindful, willing, and aware to make that happen.
Yes. And there's research, right, that bears the standards that are set for leadership in P&L, that there's been research that African Americans have actually excelled in many of these facets. And so the notion that there is a inability to find is just like what you said before. Some people just say, well, we just can't do this. We don't know how to do this. This is impossible. So it is mind over matter.
And I appreciate an organization who's willing to at least admit they don't know how. Mm-hmm. But my challenge are those organizations who refuse to admit they have an ugly baby.
Right.
Then will use all the metrics in the world to defend their position. And that's where, you know, I find the most troublesome.
Right. And even the ability to go deeply into the data that lets you know where the gaps are and where the opportunities lie. It's enough to be everyone's happy in terms of engagement, but then when you dig deeper into who specifically is having more challenges in the talent life cycle, are you willing to look at
that? And that's where I push back on leaders to dig deeper. You know, it's amazing. You know, I've presented to boards and you know, Wall Street, what have you. Sure. Leaders will get under, you know, peel back the onion on everything, but not DEI.
But not that. That's right.
Yeah, so we'll accept a number that says, well, we have people of color of 30%, but not do our research to say, okay, of that 30%, how much of it is Latinx? How much of it is Black? How much of it is Asian American? You know, because you can hide a lot in those metrics. Yes, it's not enough to say we have 20% representation of Black leaders in our corporation.
Right.
When you peel back that onion and find of that 20%, 99% of them are first and second level managers, and very few, if any, are senior leaders. And so use that same lens of, you know, magnifying what's important to you to look at DEI and measure it the same way. Don't just take off the cuff, you know, high level answers.
Makes sense. And there seems to be the notion that if you are already at a lower level and you stay at a lower level, your chances of excelling to higher level responsibilities is harder because you're already behind.
You're already behind. And again, it paints this mental model of, well, Keith is a first level manager. He's been here 7 years. He hasn't been promoted. Must be something wrong with Keith.
All right.
Right.
Yes.
Instead of saying, forget about him. Where had he been given the opportunity to experience and be exposed to different things, he could also have been, you know, someone who's really matriculated. We've seen this be very successful when it comes to women. 15, 20 years ago, many organizations put concerted efforts in to their development of women.
Right.
Now, looking back, I will tell you that from my perspective, the beneficiary of that primarily was white women.
Yes,
but the point of the matter is we know the blueprint. We know the playbook. We know that when you expose people to different parts of the business, when you give them stretch assignments, when you give them mentors and sponsors, that person will excel.
That's right.
Or they'll opt out, but at least they have that opportunity.
That sponsorship is key.
Huge.
Like the differentiator.
Yeah. You know, I tell people nobody breaks through the glass ceiling on their own. Someone who's already on the other side has to see you, recognize your value, and be willing to pull you through.
And when we think about the fact that this has been an issue for so long, beyond the mental models, are there other factors that you think are at play that makes this challenge persist so long, decades at a time?
You know, a lot of it, you know, I would say is mental models, but those mental models, many of them are born out of systemic racism.
That's right.
And lack of opportunity. One of the things I talk about when I meet with senior leaders is the fact that we didn't start from the same place. I use the game of Monopoly because it's one they can relate to. And I say, well, think about this. If white men got to play Monopoly for 5 hours before women could play, before Latinx could play, before Black, how successful do you think they could be?
Yes.
Given that they had a 5 hour advantage. Head start, you
that's
know,
right. Advantage.
Advantage. Exactly. And so that's a big part of it, that's right? It is, again, it's built in. And then the other thing is, No one, let's be honest, no one gives up power or authority easily, right?
No.
It's one of those things where nobody wants to do that, right? And so, but I think the smart corporations are realizing that we're moving to, you know, a very diverse population by 2040. They talk about it being a majority-minority company. Mm-hmm. And if you want to really be that employer of choice or win that war for talent, you have to be an inclusive organization where everyone can see themselves in your organization thriving.
That's right. It is. It's not enough to have just a few people in your leadership pipeline or at the executive level who are inclusive, who are curious, who have emotional intelligence and think about equity and think about empathy and what that means. It is imperative. So the question is, are we holding people accountable for that? Do we recruit for that? Do we develop for that?
You mentioned the key word, and it's accountability. Mm. You know, anything in corporate America that we value, we extend resources to it, we plan, we measure, and we hold people accountable. Mm-hmm. DEI is one of the few places I've seen little to no accountability.
Yes.
And when I talk about accountability, Charlotte, I'm not saying that, you know, you necessarily have to dock my pay or my bonus. Mm-hmm. I'm saying something as simple as every quarter business leader, when you report out on your results for the business, report out on your progress on DEI.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I've learned is if I know as a leader, I'm going to have to present and talk about this.
That's right.
I will give attention to it.
That's right.
If I know it's not going to be part of the business conversation or it's going to be something over here for HR to talk about, I won't give it the same effort and energy. So when I talk about accountability, just start at the basic level of having people report out on a regular basis, regular cadence, their progress.
Exactly. It's baffling to me sometimes when you think about it. We have dashboards for everything. Why not this?
Yeah, absolutely. And make it a dashboard that's part of your business P&L dashboard.
Exactly. Precisely.
Because human capital is important. Yes,
absolutely. Critical. And unless as we automate, yes, we understand there's going to be some more roles that are left to technology. But there are going to be some that no matter what we do, it requires a human touch and a human experience and quality effort attached to it.
Absolutely.
So then it also makes me think, well, if we're automating, if we're not seeing the progress and we're investing our efforts in developing ourselves and getting passed over, is entrepreneurship a better option for Black professionals? And if so, why?
Cheryl, I believe that entrepreneurship is one of the many tools in our toolkit that we can use. In fact, it's one that I think has been the least utilized. I came up in a generation where my parents pushed go to college, get that good corporate job.
That's right.
Get, you know, 30 years at gold watch and retire. Mm-hmm. And entrepreneurship wasn't necessarily something that was preached. And so, you know, one of the things I love about this new generation, these millennials and these Gen Y, is that they have a more of an entrepreneurship mentality.
Yes.
I think just as Black people in particular, we do need to focus as equal on entrepreneurship as it is, you know, working in corporate America. Sure, that's great. And I've done it for 40 years. I would never talk against it.
Yes.
But I will tell you that we do need more Black entrepreneurs in everything from as basic as, you know, construction, electrical, plumbing, what have you, to the more competitive skills of coding, what have you. And so I encourage young professionals that if they have that entrepreneurial slant and bent, to go for it.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the style of next generations. What impact do you think this whole experience over the decades from the past to present are having on this generation? Whether millennials, Gen Z, Gen X?
Yeah, I have four millennial kids in their 30s. And the one thing I will tell you is that they will tell me, Dad, I never want to go through what you had to go through in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is they are willing to walk away, or they're willing to do something, you know, in the gig economy, you know, they just really won't do it. And I understand that and I respect that. And so I think what's going to happen in corporate America is that you will see a different attitude. You know, when I got into corporate America, it was a little bit, if I'm honest, about how do you fit in?
Still, in some cases, is how do you fit?
Yeah, but I mean, when I talk about how you fit, Charlotte, I mean, you know, I worked for an organization where it was, you know, blue or gray suit.
That's right.
You know, black brogue.
That's right.
Shoes,
that's right.
You know,
absolutely.
Assimilation is how you exceed.
That's
right?
Correct.
This new generation is not really embracing assimilation.
No.
They want to be heard and valued for who they are. They want to bring their whole self to work. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I think that corporations are going to have to deal with that differently because the generation is just, it's a different generation.
And even in my conversations with students as well as employees in this demographic, I've heard more of the, if I have to explain to you why there should be a business case for diversity, then I actually don't even want to work here. Because this is just fundamental. And if you don't get that, then we really shouldn't even be talking.
Yeah. And I subscribe to that. There was a time 15, 20 years ago, maybe you could make that argument. Mm-hmm. But there are studies upon studies from McKinsey to Deloitte to other organizations that the most diverse organizations have more greater innovation, greater profitability, a lot more, you know, customer satisfaction, their net promoter scores are greater. And so, you know, if you don't accept that now, the saying goes, none are so blind as those who will not see. You're choosing not to see it.
That's right. That's right. You have to really be willing to look and be curious, right? To understand what the needs are. And I noticed when you were talking in your book about the importance of really having that honest dialogue and feedback, that's so important to performance, whether it's individual or organizational. How challenging is that to have that honest, open feedback loop?
It's very difficult for any of us to hear feedback that isn't flattering or you know, calls out our shortcomings. But those who are willing to do that, because I believe feedback is a gift.
It is.
You know, whether it's good, great, or otherwise. But it's challenging, right? Because egos are involved. Emotions are involved.
Right.
But I will tell you that if you take the time to provide that safe space, you will find, you know, you get more answers, you'll get more buy-in. The biggest mistake a lot of organizations make is they have the best of intentions, Charlotte.
Yes.
But they get into a back room with senior executives who don't look like the diverse population they're trying to help. They create these plans and they do something to a group instead of doing something with a group.
Right.
I always encourage, have these grassroots sessions, these unvarnished truth sessions, whether they're in person or anonymous through surveys. You've got to get the input from the people you're trying to help.
Exactly.
Because absent of that, you know, it's the diagnosis that you know, creates the cure.
Exactly.
And so if you misdiagnose what's really happening, you know, you can have all the unconscious bias training you want. You may miss the mark.
Totally. And the mark moves. It doesn't stay the same.
Absolutely.
And I think that's also missing, I believe, is the ability to focus on one group and meet their needs, and then which ultimately meets the needs of others. So if you focus on, for example, mothers and their needs for flexible scheduling and flexible work arrangements, it doesn't just benefit them. If we look at it universally, then we start to think about how can we make you more productive and help you live your life and also do your best work. And if that flexibility arrangement works for you, then maybe it's possible that it works for others as well. So thinking about one group can also benefit many if you focus.
Yeah, but the key to that is if you take the time to think about how this benefits the many.
Many, yes.
Or are you just satisfied with saying, hey, this one group's doing well. From a metric standpoint, it makes my numbers look good, so I don't really have to think about the
anyone
others.
Else. Yes, yes.
You got it.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I get, and I wanted to bring this up because I've gotten some pushback from folks, even the publishers, is, well, why black? Why black? And I say, here's my answer to that.
Yeah.
Every October in this country, we celebrate breast cancer awareness.
That's
you know, the NFL players wear pink.
Yes.
And we don't celebrate breast cancer awareness because we don't care about lung cancer. Or we don't care about pancreatic cancer. We celebrate it because there is one group, there's one demographic that's disproportionately affected by breast cancer, and that's women.
Correct.
I will tell you that there's one group of people who's been disproportionately affected by systemic racism, lack of opportunity, what have you. and it's a black professional. So to your point, you know, just as the civil rights movement provided the framework to lift up other groups, I believe that if you really take this effort and learnings we've done, particularly in how to advance women, play that, take that playbook and play it to black professionals, you too will see all groups rise.
Exactly. And that's a, such an important inclusive perspective that you're bringing, right? And I think we think about who's missing, who's not being addressed, and the benefits will come.
Absolutely. And but you have to have that mindset.
You do. It is a, you have to have a vision and an interest, first of all, to actually be able to do something about it. And that's, I think, part of the reason things are lacking, that inertia that exists a lot in many cases. So then how important is inclusive leadership for promoting change that you're talking about?
Inclusive leadership is essential. We need people who are at the table, who have a seat at the table, who can represent, when I say represent, think through the issues and challenges that may be unique to different groups. So that's the first thing. I've been in many succession planning meetings or calibration meetings where, you know, had I not been in that room, someone who had been capable and qualified might not have been given that opportunity because someone else either didn't realize their value or devalued their value. And so you need those seats at the table to really help bring that to life. The other thing is, you know, there's a phrase I steal from 100 Black Men of America that says, if they can see it, they can be it. You know, if I come into your organization and I don't see anyone who looks like me at the senior levels, subliminally, you've just sent me a message that's saying, I can't get there.
That's right.
Right. And it's important to be able to see diverse leadership at the organization at the highest levels to also create that, that hunger, that energy to say, hey, I can do that too.
Well, you definitely have to see to believe. And then also there's the pioneering spirit, I guess, for those who have not yet broken that pattern of behavior and that pattern of status and support and accomplishment.
Yeah. The other challenge is once you have risen to a level of prominence in corporate America as a black professional, I do think that you not need to be apologetic about, you know, looking for diverse talent or bringing a diverse talent. I've seen leaders get that seat at the table and not use their voice. And my thing is, if you're going to be a seat at the table, not use your voice, then give up your seat. Because again, you know, we need your voice. You're there for a reason. You were typically brought there for a reason. And so if you're a black leader, black executive, and you're not upholding causes or you're not pushing the envelope, or you're not raising concerns about these things, then you send a message to the rest of your leadership or your board that, okay, maybe it's not important. So, you know, you have to have that seat at the table, but use that voice.
And what do you think about the risk that some leaders may feel they're taking if they're black professionals at an executive level and they feel the climate is such that this might not be well received if I really push this envelope about equity in this organization?
You know, to me, I would question whether I belong in that organization, right? Because if I go back to something I shared earlier, is that every organization wants the best and brightest talent. And that should be regardless what shell it comes in, male, female, you know, gay, lesbian, you name it, right? And so I always start from the premise of I'm not looking for necessarily black talent. I'm looking for the best talent. And guess what? By default, some of that's going to be black. I've never had any of my white peers worry if they've hired too many white associates.
Not a big concern, right?
Not a big concern. But these are real concerns, and I get the optics on that can sometimes be challenging, right? But I think that's where, because folks like you and I stand on the shoulders who've come, of folks who've come before us, I owe it to those who come behind me to be that voice, to speak to them, for them, to make their way somewhat easier than mine. And so that's a risk I'm personally willing to take. I do know others who don't think that way. And, you know, that's their choice.
When we talked about the importance of understanding the needs of others before you fulfill that need, it made me think of the importance of allyship in the sense that you truly have to listen and get a true understanding of what value your advantage and privilege can bring before you start to prescribe, well, I think I can do this for you, and I think I can actually open this door and introduce you to these people and get you prepared for this opportunity. What's your thoughts about this this really well-intentioned perspective that could be actually more challenging and maybe adverse in terms of the way it's received.
Yeah, and there are a lot of well-intentioned people who are really trying to move the needle for Black professionals who don't look like us. Mm-hmm. What I always challenge them is, again, it's the diagnosis that determines the cure. Make sure that, you know, you're spending time with these very folks that you're trying to help to mm-hmm. understand what their challenges and what their burden is. I'll give you an example. I was consulting with an organization who well-intentioned leadership, and their answer was, you know, if Blacks just had more higher education, you know, that would be the tide to lift all boats. So let's put programs in place to educate them, and that'll do it. When we peeled back that onion and looked at where their Black population stood relative to education, yes. what they found surprisingly was that they over-indexed in education. They had more PhDs, they had more master's degrees, yes. MBAs than the folks that reported to them. And so education by itself was not the issue. Mm-hmm. I challenged and I pushed back and I said, here's the issue for me. Mm-hmm. Talent is distributed equally. And what I mean by that is that there are talent in Black, Latino, gay, I mean, you name it. Mm-hmm. So talent is there.
Yes.
It's opportunity that's not distributed equally.
Right.
And so making sure that you understand what are the real hindrances, what are the real roadblocks, mm-hmm. And don't just assume, ally, that you know what that is.
Exactly.
Because you could be well-intentioned, but you could actually be more of the part of the problem mm-hmm. than the solution if you just don't take that time to listen.
Exactly. We all want support. We all want advocates and sponsorship, ideally. The question is, are people prepared to do that work? And if they are, do they really know what is expected and required, or is it just a vision of how this works? Just because I have
And the great leaders take that time to educate themselves what that is. They don't come to me to educate them. They educate themselves.
Precisely.
And what I found is that education leads to empathy. Empathy leads to compassion, and compassion leads to action.
Absolutely. And at Inclusive Leaders Group, we do believe that everyone has the ability to be an ally for anyone. Truly, even from a understanding of marketing and understanding of how you address and attract certain consumers. I don't have to be an executive to be able to give you some insight as to a certain market or opportunity or perspective.
The easiest ally role is to be an ally of the culture of the corporation. So when a young mm-hmm. professional comes in, or a diverse professional comes in, helping them be an ally, help them understand the culture of that organization.
That's right.
The do's and the don'ts.
Oh my gosh.
Unwritten rules.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's, anyone can be an ally at any level.
That's right. That's the big unspoken differential, right?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to a middle management leader who doesn't quite understand what he or she needs to do? They just know they have to do something different. What advice would you give them?
The first thing I would say is be totally self-aware. And what I mean by that is take an account of your strengths, but also be honest enough about your lesser strengths, those mm-hmm. opportunity areas where you know you need to develop and grow. Mm-hmm. I would also say, don't just limit that awareness to your own, you know, vision. Ask those who work with you, who are family members, to really give you kind of that 360 feedback mm-hmm. on, you know, here are the things you do well. Mm-hmm. Here are the things that maybe you don't do well. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done that many times over my career, but my family, who knows me best,
sure.
And they will tell me, you know, that honest truth that, you know what, Dad, you know, you're great here. You're not the best listener in the world. You know, so again, be really ready to take that feedback mm-hmm. and then look for your own skills gaps.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I push everyone that I mentor on is you've got to stay current to remain relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And are you a intellectually curious person? Do you have that curiosity? Are you a continuous learner?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to do to make sure you are the best that you can be? And then make sure that you have a plan to get there. We plan our vacations. We plan everything more than we plan our careers. Be intentional about your own career and your own network and where you'd like to go with your career.
Absolutely.
Don't be a backseat driver in your own career.
Mm-hmm. And it is the first step is just, can I get in and can I fit in a lot of cases and do what's asked? And if there isn't a roadmap, then you have to behave and initiate conversations that require that clarification of
And it starts before you join the organization. Mm-hmm. Do your homework. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse with the internet and all the tools available that you can't go and find out culturally what this organization is about. Is this an organization that I can thrive in? Mm-hmm. Is it a meritocracy or is it a, you know, who knows who? Mm-hmm. When I look at their leadership, do you see leadership today that looks like you in place?
Right.
You know, do you see them being recognized by different universe organizations? I mean, there's ways you can find, and we live in a world, for us, I think it's 3 degrees of separation. You know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody.
That's correct.
Do your homework.
That's right.
Because too often we will take a great job in a company that's not the best fit for us.
And
you got to do your homework before you get in.
Hit the nail on the head, Keith, with that. It is.
Yeah.
It's tempting too, right? Because you want to work.
Absolutely. you want to work and you want that title and you want that salary.
Yes.
But every company has their own culture. There are certain companies, Charlotte, I can't work for because I know enough about their culture that says, I'm not in a dog eat dog. Mm-hmm. I'm going to step on your shoulders to make myself look good. If that's your culture, I don't want to be there.
Yeah. No, you have to know that. Well, knowing yourself and knowing others. So that emotional intelligence piece really does ring true.
Absolutely.
All right. Any other thoughts, questions that we haven't discussed that you think is really important?
You know, there's one thing I leave out there whenever I talk to professionals no matter what their color, ethnicity, what have you, is there are three things as a professional you've got to manage. Mm-hmm. Number one is your performance. You've got to be a consistent high performer. Mm-hmm. And most of us get that. But if you only focus on your performance, you can be the hardest working person that never gets promoted in your organization.
That's right.
You also have to manage your exposure, who you know, mm-hmm. who knows you, what they know about you, what you know about the organization. And then lastly, your perception or your brand.
Yes.
You know, you have a brand, whether you recognize it or not. You know, people know what to expect or not to expect when you walk into a room. Mm-hmm. So are you managing that brand? Mm-hmm. Are you making sure that your brand is viewed in the light of integrity and teamwork and you know, those types of things? Or are you your brand selfish or what have you? And so managing all three, performance is essential. It's foundational. Sure. You have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't look at the other two of exposure or perception, mm-hmm. You could still run into trouble in your career.
Right. So it's the results and the relationships. And I also think about reach. So how do people really know you? And as you get more influential, your reach and your brand have to be consistent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we live in a world where, you know, there's a iPhone camera everywhere. And, you know,
yes.
You have to be very, very careful and protect that brand.
Absolutely. And be willing to get feedback and seek it out. And actually respond.
Right? Respond. And the one feedback I will tell people is when you get negative feedback, because to me, there's three types. There's great feedback that says, Keith, you're great. And I agree with that.
Right.
There's feedback that says, Keith, you know, you need some help in this area, but I agree with that. And so I do it. Those two are easy. The tough feedback is when you get feedback that you don't understand, don't agree with, or you disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell people is take the emotion out and ask two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example of when I behave that way, or what does it look like when I'm behaving that way?
Yes.
Because what you may find is it could be just misperception that you still have to manage. But if you get too emotional and you push back and you don't, you know, dig deeper, two things happen. One, you're not likely to get that feedback again because feedback is tough enough to give as it is. And so
down.
If you get defensive, people will shut down.
They sure will.
And you can actually just really, you know, stifle your own career over something that could have been addressed if you'd just been open enough to receive it.
And that's why it is a gift, right? So don't reject the gift. It's like, accept the gift.
It is the gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly. And say thank you for that feedback, right?
Absolutely.
However you feel about it. Just thank them. Gracious. Well, I want to thank you, Keith, for sharing your knowledge and deep expertise with us and years, decades of real world perspective and experience. And so we look forward to continuing to follow you and your best practices and make sure that we're adapting to make our lives better from a work perspective, but also from a personal and otherwise life experience perspective, because we know we can plan all we want, but in a lot of ways There are a lot of things that happen that we didn't exactly plan on.
Didn't plan on and didn't value, you know, and leaving you, you know, one thing I'll tell you, the pandemic, I think, taught all of us, as God put us in a corner and said, time out, to focus on what's important, you know, what's valuable, you know, what means the most to us. And so I think it was a chance for us to reset and reprioritize. So hopefully many of your listeners in your audience have done that and continue to do that.
Absolutely. Well, you've certainly given us cause to think about it, but then also inspiration and practical advice to do something about it, which is what really counts. So I want to thank you again. And really, there's more to come, I think, in terms of how do we make sure that this is lasting and we sustain it. And that's individual, team, and organizational focused.
Yeah, we don't want this just to be a moment. We want it to be a movement.
No, that's right. Totally right. Well said. Well, thank you again. Appreciate you. And we will do this again, because I think there's going to be more stories to tell and just a marker of the progress that is being made over time. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate you joining us.
Take care.
Take care.